This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Know-How is brought to you by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This episode of Know-How is brought to you by Blue Apron, the number one fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service in the country. See what's on the menu this week and get three meals free with your first purchase and free shipping by going to blueapron.com/know-how.
Today on Know How,
we're backing it up.
Welcome to Know How. It's the show where we build, bend, break, and upgrade. I'm Brian Burnett.
And I'm Nathan Olivares-Giles.
And we're here to talk to you about cloud storage today. And as our performance alluded to earlier, backing it up.
Oh yeah, backups for your backups, backups on backups. We're going to dig into all of it. There are so many options.
Right.
And it can sometimes be confusing. Like, which one should you use? Why? What are the differences? But one of the things that I try and tell people whenever they're asking about any type of backup, whether it's on a portable hard drive or network storage or in the cloud, is that you really need to have multiple, because in case one fails,
yes,
you want to have a backup for your backup, which sounds ridiculous, and people always laugh at me when I tell them that, but it's true.
No, absolutely. It's really one of those things you never think of until you lose something that you can't replace.
Yep.
And you really should be backing stuff up, because so many services offer a free option, and then we're not only going to just talk about cloud stuff, but we'll also talk about options for physical storage, because the thing with cloud storage is it's usually limited to a small amount unless you want to pay like certain fees.
Yep.
Whereas if you have your own localized physical storage, I mean, that's good because you can hold on to it. You have it in your possession. But it's also easier to have more storage for less money.
Yeah, so more bang for your buck, definitely. I was a victim of not having enough backups for my backups. I lived in Mexico for a summer with some family back in college in 2003. I had all of my photos from that summer vacation on a hard drive. And, of course, that hard drive got damaged. I lost all of my stuff. Total heartbreak. Back then, cloud storage wasn't even an option.
No.
It wasn't even something you could really consider. But I only had one portable hard drive. And, you know, I paid the price for that.
Yeah, and well, diving into like our first one of backing up on cloud, I would use Google Drive for most of everything that I do photo-wise now.
Yeah.
Because
yeah,
like most of the stuff I back up to the cloud are photos.
Yeah.
Because it's tied in, at least with Android. Like, you can use Google Photos where every time you take a shot and you plug your phone into Wi-Fi at the end of the day, it then uploads it to your drive, which starting on Google is 15 gigabytes free if you use that. If you want to pay for it, it's $199 for a terabyte. So not too bad. That's a month, $199 mm-hmm, a month. Mm-hmm. And then if you want to do 10 terabytes, which would be like every photo and video I've ever taken, and then some, because there's no way I have 10 terabytes of anything, is $100 a month. So, and like here at TWiT, we use Google Drive for like all our docs.
Yeah.
And Gmail's tied into that too. So I think I have like 3 gigs of email stuff that I should probably get rid of, but I mostly use it for photos. What do you use it for?
Oh, definitely. Mostly for photos. Every newsroom that I've worked in, we've used Google Drive in some form, Google Docs. Now, of course, they're like separate corporate accounts, so keeping the work stuff separate from the personal. But for my personal, it's mostly photos, just like you said. I am an iPhone user, mostly testing out Android devices too. But even on iOS, you can set up the Google Photos app to basically copy your camera roll over. Mm-hmm. Now, that being said, since you do have to pay for these services, some offer free tiers, but most you have to pay, especially if you start getting up there in storage, you kind of want to every once in a while go through and, you know, make sure that you're getting rid of stuff that you're not going to look at anymore. It's really easy to get tempted to say, okay, all this stuff is backed up to the cloud.
Right.
I'm just going to shoot photos with abandon. And then before you know it, you need to pay for that extra stuff. And they're even asking you to do so because you're reaching your limits.
Yeah.
Google Photos, inside of their apps, both on the desktop and mobile, they make it pretty easy because they actually have their own algorithms, and they'll pick what they think are the best photos, the best lighting, the best smiles, whatever. They'll even animate little videos together for you and stuff like that. There's a ton of great features that make it an outstanding photo service. And like you said, that's tied into Drive. You can access all of your Drive stuff across the Google Photos app, across Gmail, across all of their services. So if you're a Google user, you're basically a Drive user by default. If you have Gmail, you kind of have this too. And it's really easy to use all of that stuff. But you can use their algorithms to say, okay, this is the one great photo, you know, I want from this, you know, time when I was at the beach, and you know, when then we went to the restaurant after, and I'm going to save these couple great photos here. Literally, there are going to be dozens in between that are like less great that you probably took, and you can get rid of those. Now, that's if you trust Google's decision making enough. Some photo sticklers, and I've been one of those folks in the past, don't really necessarily want to trust algorithms to make all those decisions for you. And so that's fine too. You can take the time and you can go through that stuff and choose and delete yourself, which, man, I've put so many hours into doing that. It's probably ridiculous.
Yeah, I was just thinking about that because I did a trip to Arizona and I had forgotten that Google Photos actually ties all the stuff that you did and then makes like packages it for you with their algorithm.
Exactly.
Like if you go to my laptop, Al, you can see I flew from Santa Rosa to the Grand Canyon. And then it kind of stitches all these things together.
Like, yep, there's downtown Phoenix. There's a Grand Canyon on the right. Yeah,
it does some cool stuff like with this panorama. I think I took that one. This one didn't come out so well. You can see the steady line, and then you can tell there's a little bit of a stitching thing.
It's tough to make a perfect panorama. Let's be real.
It really is. But the thing that it took me a while to realize was so if you look at how much storage I have, I'm using 10 gigs of 17 gigabytes.
Yep.
Most of that 7 gigabytes is from my phone. And that's after what I do is I upload a lot of photos over like a period of time, like a year. And then I download them. I put them in a zip file and I back them up locally.
That's smart.
And then clear out my Drive. Smart. So then I have more space.
Fantastic.
But
3 gigs worth of Gmail. I've got 5 gigs worth of Gmail.
Oh, really?
Yeah. What is that? I don't even know what that is.
It's
got to
be all attachments and stuff that people send you.
Yeah.
But one thing that I didn't realize when I first was using Drive was that if you delete something, it's kind of like it goes to, if you go back to my laptop.
Yes.
So you delete something, remove it. All right, cool. Like I'm trying to free up space. You definitely want to be sure to go to your trash folder and then tell it to delete forever. Or you can restore it. But if you delete forever, then that's when you start to see the gigabytes go down on your storage.
Yeah.
Because I was like, oh, I deleted all these photos and videos and stuff. Why do I still have 10 gigabytes taken up?
Yeah, it makes a difference. I mean, I'm one of those people that even on my desktop, like you're not going to see like documents everywhere. I'll have folders. I'll have like 2 or 3 little icons. And I may be, you know, people tell me I'm a bit OCD or something about these sorts of things.
Me too.
But I really try to keep it clean. Like, you try and treat your cloud storage as that hallway closet or your bedroom or whatever. Just don't just clutter it with stuff. Every once in a while, go in there and ask yourself, do I really need this? Because if you're paying for the storage space, you might as well make the most of it. And you don't need to clutter up your digital life the same way that you don't want to clutter up your physical space, too.
Definitely. And the next one on the list that I use a lot is Dropbox. Mm-hmm. We use that still at work a lot for sharing files and things like that. So I have like a personal account and I have a one that I use for work. But my personal one, if you go to my laptop, Al, is pretty clean because I just went through it. Like I went through all my camera uploads and downloaded everything because I was double backing up, actually.
Yeah.
I was backing up to Google Photos and I was backing up to Dropbox. And it was kind of redundant.
Which is a responsible thing to do. You want the redundancy. You know, let's talk about those worst case scenarios. You don't want to think about them. You hate to think about them. But heaven forbid, and while we're talking about it, turn on two-factor authentication everywhere you can. You can do that on Google. You can do that on Dropbox. You can do that on iCloud. Basically all the services we're talking about. But, you know, with this, you want to have those backups of your backups because worst case scenario, we hate to think about it, but if somehow someone got into your Gmail account, your Google account, someone got into your Dropbox and they totally annihilated and got rid of all the stuff you had, you know, then that would be a heartbreak.
Yeah, it would be a heartbreak. And the nice thing about Dropbox, too, is that it has so phone app for iOS and Android, which I'm pretty sure Google does for Drive also. But
yes, they do.
the desktop client, you know, you can sync onto your computer. So files that you move from your computer onto there will be on locally and be saved to the cloud.
Yeah.
And me and Padre had mentioned if you get crypto locked or whatever, those files could be encrypted and you might not be able to access them on Dropbox on the cloud. But Dropbox has revision history.
Oh,
so
nice.
You can go back. That's another reason to back up stuff to the cloud is that if things get messed up on your desktop and they also get messed up on Dropbox, you could go back and do revision history and get those files back. So
that's a really
important stuff.
It's a really good point. I know Drive offers something like that. Box as well, a Dropbox competitor that's a little bit more business-minded. They offer some similar revision history stuff. Definitely a feature you want to look out for when you're deciding between cloud services.
Yeah, and I think Dropbox is 5 gigabytes free. I know on my machine I have 7.5 because I think I referred a couple of people or I bought the Moto X. There's some sort of deal. Like, that's the thing with a lot of these services is it's like, if you refer a friend, we'll give you 500 more megabytes, which doesn't sound like a lot, but it kind of adds up if you do like 10 or 15 friends or something like that.
It definitely adds up. Yeah, I also was a big Dropbox user. I'd be using it a little bit less. The user interface for me isn't as attractive as Google Drive. I think of all the cloud services out there, Drive might have the best looking user interface, but really you got to find what works for you. You know, some might like a little a more visual style like Google Drive. Some might like something a little simpler like Dropbox or iCloud. But I actually, now looking at my Dropbox folder, mm-hmm. I need to go through and clean some stuff up here. Here I'm lecturing everyone watching about leaving old files there, and mm-hmm. I'm looking at it, and I need to do a little bit of housekeeping myself.
Yeah, and what happens to me a lot of time with Dropbox is somebody will share a folder with me,
yeah,
and then that goes into my allotment of gigabytes, and it takes up space. There's sometimes where it's like, oh, I didn't need these videos for all this time. I need to unsubscribe to this folder so it's not continually syncing.
And that can be a double-edged sword. Like, that's one of the big reasons why I keep using Dropbox, because I have a folder that I share digital comics with friends mm-hmm. on, and then another folder where we share music, a different group of friends. And that's kind of, you know, it's like every probably month it gets updated.
Yeah.
You get a nice little email notification saying, hey, you know, so-and-so added, you know, new content to this folder. Go check it out. And it's kind of a nice way to share stuff, but it can eat into your storage plans.
Yeah, one that I forgot about that I didn't even think of as like a cloud backup because it's music, mm-hmm. which I pay for Google Play Music.
Yeah.
And you can upload all your songs to that. So there's like, I have a bunch of music like locally on my machine at home, but if you pay for a subscription service like Spotify or Google Play, you don't really need to have that music like saved somewhere, but at least with Google Google Music, it's like uploading all your music to the cloud. So
yeah, it's nice because Google Music does this, and Apple with iTunes Match does it too, where they'll recognize the albums that you bought before, and they'll say, "Oh, okay, like, you know, Jay-Z, Reasonable Doubt, yeah, we have that in our library. We'll give you the nicest version of it. We'll give you the high-quality version." But then, you know, your buddy's obscure, you know, college punk rock band that only made, like, one EP and then broke up.
Yeah.
Like, you can't find that on a streaming service. You might still want to listen to that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And if you upload it to Google's cloud or to Apple's cloud, respectively, then you can stream that and you can listen to it as though it were in your library, because it is in your digital library. And correct me if I'm wrong, those options, you have to pay for that type of cloud storage separately from this. Those come with the music subscriptions, right?
Yes. I think it's $10 a month for Google Music. And it's a separate allotment of, I think it's like 10,000 songs or something that you can upload or more.
But if you're, you know, if you're like me, and I'm guessing like you too, and you have those sorts of albums that you've collected over the years mm-hmm. that you know you want to listen to that aren't widely available, an independent artist and, you know, obscure release, whatever, it's worth paying for.
Yeah, I think so too. Another one that I've used, not extensively, I know our TD Alex has, is OneDrive.
Excuse me, Brian, that's Director.
Oh, Director. I'm sorry. How did I get that wrong? Is Microsoft OneDrive. Microsoft pushes this a lot. Like, I've been seeing little pop-up ads on my computer at home saying like, hey, you know, you should reinstall OneDrive. You should use OneDrive. I'm like, I know I have an account, but it starts with 5 gigabytes free. And if you want to pay for it monthly, it's 50 gigabytes you can get for $199. And if you want a terabyte, it's $699 for a month. And but it comes with Office 360, which isn't something that we use here at Twit. But if that's something that you're interested in using, it's not a bad deal if you want a terabyte of online storage. Yeah. And Office 360. So that's like Microsoft Word, Excel, PowerPoint, OneNote, stuff like that.
And that allows you to use both the desktop apps and the in the cloud, you know, through the browser versions.
Yeah.
And kind of like Google Docs, you can have like a lightweight experience that you can edit, you know, stuff really quickly, you know, in the cloud, which is pretty nice. If you're already entrenched in that Microsoft Office ecosystem, mm-hmm. This could make sense. And I think it's pretty smart of them to pair, you know, their most successful product outside of Windows, which is Office, mm-hmm. with this cloud solution, which they're trying to get to build up and up. Recently, I was checking out the new Surface laptop, giving it an early look before handing it off to Leo for a full review. Mm-hmm. And if I have it right, Cortana was even suggesting, hey, you know, let's walk you through the operating system. Like, here's where you can see your OneDrive files and all those sorts of things.
Yeah.
I do use the Outlook web client email service, not the desktop app. And there are some things that are tied to OneDrive, but, I've barely touched it.
Yeah, I know. We were thumbing through Alex's files earlier today. Yeah. And he had, 450 gigabytes of stuff stored in the cloud?
Wow.
And yeah, Ooh. But he's also got a terabyte and something as his limit. Yeah.
Wow.
1.3 terabytes.
You're not playing around.
Well, so he's got the subscription to
the 365. I think it's my dad is subscribed Office 365, and with the home version, you can add up to like 5 users in the house or something. So
he just
made me a name on there, which just gave me a terabyte of storage.
A little family plan action going on.
Okay. And then Microsoft's version of music stuff, the Groove Music
Pass. And it's the same deal where you upload, you know, your MP3s, whatever CDs that you've ripped onto there, and it shows up in the Groove thing mm-hmm. too, in your library.
And then it gives you a camera roll bonus. I wonder what that, and a service bonus.
Yeah, I think the camera roll bonus, that may have been an old Windows phone thing when you take a picture, it just uploads automatically to there. And I think the first time you do that, it just gives you a bonus just to convince you to turn that on.
Nice. And you got 200 gigs just for buying a Surface, it looks like. Awesome.
And every now and then there's, I think one of the older Surfaces had some more bonuses and some other stuff. So every now and then you get kind of a bonus free with something else that you've done, and it just shows up, and that's cool because it just adds your thing, and then it might go away at some point, but if you have enough of that and you keep going, then it, you know, comes and goes. And
a few years ago, I was reviewing every single Android phone and Chromebook that came out at previous jobs, and my storage for Google Drive and Dropbox at one point was like massive. All that stuff is like, you know, it basically only lasts like a year, 2 years. Mm-hmm. It's all gone away now. So I don't have any of that. At a moment, it peaked. It got really, really huge.
That's one of the pitfalls, though, right? Because I think the same thing for me. I got the original Moto X. And if you signed up for Google Photos with it or something like that, you got like 50 gigs or 100 gigs of Google Drive to use.
Yep.
But then after a year, that goes away. And if you've already, you know, depend on it for backing stuff up and you have more gigabytes taken up than you have after that year, you're kind of like, well, I guess I have to pay for it now. So
that's how they get you.
They're like, hey, we'll let you use all this for free for like a year. And then once your data is there and we have it, you're incentivized to start paying more for it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, so much of this comes down to habits. Like, mm-hmm. you know, what is the user interface that you like? Do you have your laptop's, local storage backed up to a cloud? You can do that to Dropbox. You can do that to Google Drive, as you mentioned earlier. You know, are you taking all these pictures? Are you doing that housekeeping that we talked about? Do you have redundant services? It's all kind of about developing these habits, and things can get really out of hand really quickly, and then suddenly you're asked to spend out a lot of money that you may or may not want to be paying every month. So it can be a slippery slope.
Well, and then speaking of paying money, there's Amazon, where if you are a Prime subscriber, or I don't even know if you have to be Prime, you can use their cloud services, which I don't because I always forget about it. And it's like, oh, I'm paying for, you know, I get this as a bonus for being a Prime member, but I'm not actually taking advantage of it. But just to list off some of the stuff for Amazon, it's 5 gigabytes for free, which is pretty standard across the board. 100 gigabytes for $12.99, a terabyte for $60 for a year, and this is kind of crazy, up to 30 terabytes of storage you can use for $1,799.70.
Is that up for a year or per month?
For a year.
Okay.
For
okay.
a year.
Okay.
Yeah, right?
Still, how did they arrive at that price with $1,799.70? Like, where do you come up with the 70
cents? The tiering on Amazon was strange.
Yeah.
Like, they must have just some algorithm that's like, this is the exact amount we need for this amount of storage.
It's amazing.
It's strange. Amazing.
But yeah, I'm a Prime subscriber, and I've never touched Amazon storage stuff. I know there have been situations in the past where I've bought, back when I was still buying things on CD and vinyl. I'm not doing that as much these days. But you would get a free version of that album, and I got some music in their cloud and never touched it once.
Yep. I think I bought the Firefly soundtrack or something Amazon, because it was the only service I could find that soundtrack on. But it's tied into my Amazon Drive.
Yep.
So if you flip over to my screen now, like, you can see I have... So if you're a Prime subscriber, you can get unlimited photo uploads, unlimited storage. That comes kind of with a caveat of if you have a Fire device, too, you get that. So I think I have the Fire tablet, like the really cheap one from a while ago.
Okay.
I took like maybe four photos. Like if I go into my Amazon Drive.
They've never had great cameras.
No, but they do something. I didn't realize Amazon was doing this, too. I'll see if I can figure out.
Maybe it's got it's got a pretty nice user interface, pretty nice layout. It's like clear,
it's not
easy
bad.
To see what you got.
And they've got like family family options where if you want to share photos with like a group of friends, you can do that. So the family vault. So there's a lot of options when, and you can download the app to like start, if you want to start using this for backing up your photos.
And they have both mobile and desktop apps, right?
Yes. And you can, see, like, these are so old. I never used this. It was only for, the tablet I used for a little while.
Yeah.
But it does things like where you can, it searched for sky.
Mm-hmm,
and I
mm-hmm.
didn't type any of these in. Bridge, sky. I mean, that's stuff that you can do on Google, too, where it'll search through your photos. But it, these are the things it saw in my photos, and it made a list of them. I was like, that's kind of crazy.
You know, this would be a good time to talk about machine learning, artificial intelligence, Amazon, Google, Apple, Microsoft. Everyone's trying to build that up respectively for their companies in different ways and offering different products. But when you upload photos to Google's photo service and to Google Drive, you know, one the same, you are helping to teach their machine learning systems how to recognize faces, how to recognize sunsets, how to recognize a coffee cup, these sorts of things. And the same with Amazon as well, as we're seeing here. Now, of course, hopefully, in exchange for us feeding, you know, their machines and teaching their systems how to get smarter,
right,
hopefully we'll get better services in return. But it's definitely something to keep in mind when you're thinking, okay, should I upload this photo or not? The fact that some of these service providers are actually scanning and recognizing the photos you upload, and they're looking for certain things.
Yeah, I forgot it kind of did that, because if you go to my screen, it just, like, even in Google Photos, this is just the things.
Yeah.
The things folder, there's beer, food, racetracks, mountains, cats, like...
Yeah.
I don't... birds? Like, what photo? It's searching through all my photos and detecting birds.
Yeah.
Apparently... Oh, yeah, when we held... Oh, yeah, there's Birdie. Yep.
See, it's recognizing things in your photos that you might have forgotten of yourself.
Right? And so so if there's that photo that you know you took and you uploaded a while ago, you could search through. I don't know why it thinks this turtle is a bird, but it's getting better. It's getting better.
Yeah, artificial intelligence is still pretty stupid on the whole, but it's getting better. It's getting smarter. And you can see the tangible growth in this. A few years ago, Google Photos wasn't able to automatically recognize so many things. But nowadays, it's getting to a point where it's so good that you don't even have to go through and tag and catalog your photos the same way that you might have just a few years ago.
Yeah, you just have to remember the caveat of they have access to all your photos and stuff like that.
Yep.
So everything you're sending up to the cloud... Just know that you aren't probably the only person who could get access to that.
Yep.
So, and then you use iCloud, right?
Yeah, I do use iCloud. Being a Mac and an iOS user, and using the photo apps and you know, the iTunes match, you know, buying into that ecosystem. But also over the years, due diligence, you know, using all of these services to test them out and see what's best and all those sorts of things.
Mm-hmm.
iCloud's actually got some pretty decent prices these days. You can get 50 gigabytes for 99 cents a month, which isn't bad. They don't offer a free tier, but you can get 200 gigabytes for about $3 a month, $2.99, and then 2 terabytes at $9.99 a month. And they are in iOS 11. There's going to be a new app called Files, where you can actually plug in all of your cloud services. It actually makes iCloud more useful,
wow,
I think, and more, you know, easier to see what you got and, you know, where you can use it. But it also works with stuff like Box and Dropbox and all these other services. So something to keep an eye out for if you are an iOS user.
Okay.
And that's going to be coming in with iOS 11 in the fall. And it works on iPhone, iPad, iPod Touch, Macs, PCs. But I've, you know, done some digging, and there's no Android app here. So, you can get Apple Music on an Android device, and you can use that iTunes match. If you still have iTunes on your Mac or your PC, you're not necessarily going to have iCloud access there in the form of an app, but you can access it through the browser. And let's see here. Alex, if you want to go to my screen.
Can you re-plug your HDMI? I lost it.
Oh, yeah, I can... Replug my HDMI here.
Yeah, I didn't realize that you could manage your other cloud storage through iCloud.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty cool.
Oh, well, through that Files app in iOS.
Files app.
Yeah,
I see.
Yeah.
Okay.
So the Files app in iOS 11 is going to be separate from iCloud itself. If it's there, you know, let's be honest, it's there in part to encourage you to use iCloud.
Right.
But if you're already using some cloud services, you can plug it in. And it's kind of a nice way. If, like me, you're using a bunch of them, I mean, I'm basically using, even though I don't really dig into Amazon, I'm paying for it because I'm a private subscriber.
Right.
I have some stuff there, even if I don't interact with it on a regular basis. Same with OneDrive. It's a nice way to get kind of a big picture view across all these services of what you got.
Yeah.
Well, iCloud's user interface, it is bare bones. It's not as pretty to look at as what you're going to get with Google Drive. I got to say, I do like the way it looks a little bit better than Dropbox, but...
Yeah.
You know, it's pretty simple and straightforward, and if you like simplicity, definitely worth a shot. But, you know, a lot of folks are paying for iCloud and might not even be using the user interface in the web or this upcoming Files app when it shows up in iOS 11, something to keep an eye out for. But it is definitely growing and getting easier to use, and it's come a long way.
Nice. Well, I remember there was that that big news article about the celebrity hack. And
yes.
So do you use two-factor authentication on iCloud? Or
I use
everywhere?
Every single place I can use two-factor authentication, I do that.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just if just in case somehow, you know, your password gets into the wrong hands, if someone uses that to log into whatever, account that you have, it's then going to call on a device, usually your phone, to verify that you are you logging into that account at that time.
Right.
So it's an extra safeguard. If someone has your password, they're using their computer, you know, in their apartment or whatever dark dungeon they're doing, whatever bad things they're doing,
right,
and then they try and log in, you're going to be sitting on your couch and you're thinking, I'm not logging in anything right now.
Yeah.
No, I'm not going to approve that.
Yeah.
So it's literally one of the best ways to protect yourself. And, you know, one of my buddies, Matt Honan, a tech reporter, now an editor at BuzzFeed, I think one of the best tech journalists out there, one of the smartest out there. We used to work together at Wired. And while we were reporters, he was, like, literally, socially reverse engineered, hacked into in this way.
Yeah.
And his Google account got taken over, his Amazon account, and his Apple account. And he had, you know, still has two beautiful young daughters, and all those family photos were gone.
Deleted.
All that stuff was, you know, and it ended up just being someone who just wanted to mess around and
just be malicious.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And it's, you know, there's some great work that he did at Wired that you can still find if you look for these things online. Sorry to call you out like this, Matt, years later, in case you're watching. But, you know, it's a teachable moment, man. You know? And I was already using two-factor, but it's kind of a pain. It's like, do I really want to, like, set this up? It makes logging into everything more time-consuming, more laborious. It's not fun to use. But after going through that experience, I had maybe two-factor turn on about half the stuff I had. I turned it on everything. you gotta, as much as possible. Now you can still be compromised. You can still be taken advantage of. Mm-hmm. But you got to do everything you can to consciously protect yourself.
Right.
And it's a no-brainer.
Yeah, I think that's a good segue into the next thing we're going to be talking about, which is having physical storage in a way of backing up in case something like that does happen. But before we get to that, we'll take a little break for these messages.
I gotta tell you, I'm not the biggest cook, and I haven't been. My college diet was ramen and a lot of boxed and canned things. Not the greatest look. Blue Apron has, for me, recently changed that. I now, every Saturday, I get a big box of fresh ingredients and these fantastic little recipe cards. My repertoire is growing by the day. It's pretty fantastic. Blue Apron's mission is to make incredible home cooking accessible to everyone while supporting a more sustainable food system, setting the highest standards for ingredients, and building a community of home chefs. For less than $10 per person per meal, Blue Apron delivers seasonal recipes along with pre-portioned ingredients to make delicious home-cooked meals in 40 minutes or less. There's no weekly commitment, so you only get deliveries when you want them. You can customize your recipes every week based on your own dietary preferences, and you can choose from a variety of new recipes each week, or you can let Blue Apron's culinary team surprise you. Upcoming meals include seared chicken and creamy pasta salad with summer squash and sweet peppers, creamy shrimp rolls with quick pickles and sweet potato wedges, fresh basil fettuccine pasta with sweet corn and Cubanelle pepper, and chili butter steaks with Parmesan potatoes and spinach. Blue Apron has established partnerships with over 150 local farms, fisheries, and ranchers across the United States. By shipping the exact amount of each ingredient required for recipe, Blue Apron is reducing food waste. And their freshness guarantee promises that every ingredient in your delivery arrives ready to cook, or they'll make it right. Check out this week's menu and get three meals free with your first purchase and free shipping by going to blueapron.com/knowhow. You'll love how good it feels and taste to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron. Don't wait. Go to blueapron.com/knowhow. Blue Apron, a better way to cook.
Cool. So as great, as we were saying, as great as cloud storage is these days, there's no reason why you shouldn't be backing up physically.
Yes.
Especially with how much things cost and the amount of storage you can get for those things.
Yeah, the prices have come down so much. You can get a really nice, spacious hard drive for a reasonable price.
Right. And I think when I first got this one, which this is a WD Passport, which is a spinning drive, you know, these are going to be the best ratio of gigabytes for the price. I think I paid about $100 for this one back in the day. This is a terabyte that I have. And I think the new one that I found on Amazon is even cheaper than that. It's $79. It is a 2 terabyte Passport. I think I have a link for it on Amazon here, Al, if you want me to bring it up.
And this is a solid-state hard drive, too, right?
No, this one's a spinning drive.
Okay.
So that's why these are a little bit
affordable.
Cheaper.
Yeah.
These are, but they're USB 3, and they have a read-write speed of, like, 125 megabytes, so not bad. But what you're really getting from these drives is portability and a lot of storage. So I think even the 4 terabyte, how much is that? $120? It's really not that much more to get 4 terabytes, and that's a lot of storage.
Not bad at all.
But you also have to keep in mind, if this fails, that's a lot of storage to lose, too.
So. Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, it might be one of those situations where you want to back up. When you're doing that housekeeping, you want to take, okay, last summer's vacation photos. Yep. I don't necessarily need those in my camera roll, within fingers reach every single second of every single day. Yeah. That might be the sort of thing you can back up locally. And that's where having more space locally than what you have in the cloud might make sense.
Yeah, and the thing I use this drive for mostly is if I'm going out, well, we used to do a lot of live events where we would record a bunch of footage in the day, and I didn't want to just save it on the SD cards because I'd be using those again, but also I didn't want to save it just to my machine. I wanted a secondary backup. This was plenty of space for that. And, oh, hey, it went out of focus. Hey, camera. How long was it out of focus for?
It did like halfway through. You talked about shooting live events.
That's weird.
Can you just take a freeze frame for that?
Yeah, no, that's fine. I'll cut that.
Now it's good.
What was I talking about?
You said that what you used to mostly use these for is live events. You'd be shooting a lot of stuff during a day.
Backing it up to this hard drive. And the nice thing about this one, too, is it's powered over USB, too. Sometimes you see older ones, like I think you have one, right, that you brought in, that you need a separate power connector to supply electricity to the drive.
I have an ancient one here. Now, I love these old, rugged, lacy hard drives. Yeah. You can get new ones of this exact brand that have this like little rugged bumper here. Basically, what it is you can take off this... if you were to take off this rubber bumper, they're like some extra like little shock absorbing materials that they use, so that this could literally get thrown around, and the hard drive inside, which is just a little spinning disk drive, can stand up to some abuse. Now, of course, you don't want to drop it off, say like a 4-story building or something. You don't want to abuse it, but the idea is that if you throw it in your backpack, if you throw it in your luggage, and you put it in an overhead bin or whatever, that this will survive just kind of day to day use.
Right.
And as someone who, like I said, years ago, I had that portable hard drive that didn't have these extra rugged features, and I don't know when it got damaged. I don't know how it got damaged, but one time I tried to plug it in and it was gone. Like nothing was salvageable.
Ooh, did you hear a clicking noise or anything?
Yeah, the death
click.
It was terrible. But with this, now this one I bought back in 2008. It's an old guy for sure, and definitely a lot bigger, a lot thicker, a little bit heavier.
It looks like a little life raft.
It does. Which are, and actually, that's one of the things that I like about the newer versions with the solid-state hard drives that you can get, or even the disk drives. They're thinner, but they still keep this kind of cool life raft look, which I think is a little bit classic. This was years ago when I was running around shooting video, doing some video editing stuff. And back then, we were using FireWire, and you had to have a separate power plug, just like you mentioned. It also gave you the option of USB. Thanks to that USB port, I've been able to keep it over the years. But no longer do I really rely on it. I'm not really out there shooting video like I used to do.
Right.
And lately, I've been using it to clone my laptop drives when I'm upgrading to a new operating system or trying out a beta of an operating system and kind of playing around with things in that regard. And it's been pretty great for that. So even though it's like years old, it's definitely
still
like
chugging.
Yeah, if this is the one that you use, it's time to upgrade. Yeah. But it's been a really great drive. I've even in the past been able to use it, on plugged into the back of routers and stuff like that for a little bit of network storage and things like that too. So it's pretty fantastic. Since so many people do have these from so long ago, usually, it's not a bad idea to add like a little sticker or write your name on the bottom or something like that.
Yeah, it looks like you wrote your name on yours.
Yeah, I did. I wrote it in like as fancy of a little, script as I could.
Nice.
Yep.
I did not bother to do that on this drive, but on the next one I'll show you. Because like you mentioned, these drives are susceptible to, if you drop them, that is bad for a spinning drive. That's like the worst thing you could do. So if you're if you're okay with spending a little bit more, you could do SSD, which will be a lot more, is a lot less fragile to impact.
Definitely.
Would not recommend dropping it very often.
Yeah, this, you don't want to drop any of this stuff.
Right.
But if you're worried about that being a problem, if you're worried about it getting banged up, whether you're throwing it in your backpack or your purse or your briefcase, it's worth spending the money on the solid state.
Well, so this solid state drive is from Kingston. It's the HyperX model, and this is the 960 gigabyte, and it has 560 megabyte read. Is that right? Yeah. Oh, yeah. 560 read and 360 megabyte write.
Nice.
So it's way faster than a spinning drive. And the nice thing about these drives, too, other than it looking pretty cool, but...
It does look pretty awesome.
I don't have it in here right now. It came in because, I was underutilizing it. I was using as... So here's the enclosure. I was using it as a portable hard drive, and I put stickers on it too, because keep an eye on it.
keep too.
But so when you buy one of these drives, it comes with this enclosure,
This enclosure is specifically for when you do take it and use it portably.
Yeah, yeah, nice. It works great. Nice. So this is like a little foam thing that you put in there to give it a little bit of suspension, I guess, so it doesn't get bumped around too much.
But look how small, that space is. It's, these aren't This is something you could slip in the back of your pocket if you wanted to. It's not like the gigantic, small book size drives that we had before.
Oh, totally. It's super thin, and the part of the reason why it's so thin is because you can also put this same drive in a laptop. There's a lot of laptop form factors that'll work with. I'm using it in my desktop machine right now because it's so much faster than the old drive I had.
Yeah,
I loved using this as an external for backing things up because it was so quick writing and reading from it. But when I plugged this into my desktop PC just to try it out, I was like, okay, I can't go back to a spinning drive. Now I have an SSD in my desktop. But one of the things I love about this drive, too, is that it comes with a Kronos. Like, you had talked about copying over your OS drive.
Yeah, yeah.
If you buy this package, it comes with a free free software where you can copy your local drive to this drive and then basically boot off of that, like just
awesome.
This clean image.
It's so nice, and if you are going to be messing around, and you know, a lot of us that are early adopters, we do that sort of thing. It's like, yeah, you know what? The beta of that operating system has come out. I want to give it a shot. But you know, when you're doing that, you're going to encounter some bugs, and it might mess up your workflow.
Yeah.
It's nice to have something you can go back to, and to be able to actually boot off of this, I mean, it's that's
nice.
Awesome.
It's really awesome. Cool. But for some people who might be like, well, that's kind of a lot. I don't want to spend that much. You could also, and you want like a do-it-yourself kind of build-it spirit. Me and Padre, about a year ago, built, it's basically a tiny enclosure with an M-SATA drive.
Oh,
yeah,
nice.
So it's a Saberint enclosure, which is only $14, but it's pretty solidly built and like made to withstand a few impacts accidentally dropped it. But then what you can do is buy a M-SATA drive that will fit inside of it, and you can choose what you want. The one that we recommended was the Samsung 850 Evo, but there, as long as it's the M-SATA form factor, you can put whatever drive you want in there, and it'll be super quick, really tiny and portable. Yeah, this is episode 147, and what are we on, like 322 now?
Yeah,
so a little ways
back. A while.
But during this episode, we talked about the benefit of SSDs, and then also if you wanted to build your own, which that little drive that we built right there that I'm holding, that one I think had 500 gigabytes, and that's what we used for like all our shoots when we would go to like Black Hat and DEF CON and stuff like that.
Awesome. That's
wow.
Great. It gives
that set. Oh, my goodness. It hasn't changed much, has it?
Huh. Well, you don't have the beard anymore. There's
no?
That.
I could always bring that back.
That's awesome.
And then the last one that I wanted to mention, and I have this at home. It's a slightly different version, is IOSafe.
Yeah.
Which is like basically the tank equivalent of storage. So IOSafe makes... mine looks like that, but I don't have 4 terabytes. I think I have like... 900 gigabytes or something in there.
Mm-hmm.
But it looks just like that, and they're able to withstand fires, waterproof, and they also offer data recovery in case your data does get messed up or something like is their fault. They will pay for the services to like physically take the drive apart and scan the platters.
Oh, wow.
Which is very expensive if you've ever like really tried to do data recovery like
yeah.
that.
It's not cheap and it's not easy and it doesn't always work.
No, exactly.
Yeah.
And one of the other cool things about their cases is that you can bolt them to a floor. So, you know, like some people buy safes that they can like bolt to a fixture so that people can't get that. You can do that with the IOSafe too. And so if your house burns down, chances are you will still be able to get your data out of one of these.
That's awesome. And this is a great option if you really want to have basically storage in your home that you can reach from any device, that network storage. And I mean, the fact that this can like withstand a fire is pretty insane. But if things are really genuinely that important for you,
I've seen them throw it in a pool. I've seen them run them over with like
wow.
a tractor and stuff. So.
Wow.
They're pretty cool. They're tough. I mean,
yeah.
it's pricey. It comes at that version I was showing with the 4 terabytes is $664. But if you have stuff you just absolutely don't want to lose, and you basically the way you want to, you know, negate the chances of losing your stuff is you will back up to the cloud certain things and you will spread it out. You'll do it on your desktop. And then you'll also have like an IOSafe that you back it up to.
Yeah.
Have have a couple of backups of your backups is what it comes down to.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it's a recurring theme, and you're hearing us say the same things over again, but it's because they're important. You know, you want to have backups of your backups. You want to be as secure as possible. You want to turn on your two-factor authentication. Mm-hmm. You want to be in the cloud, and you want to consider going local, too. Having a good mix is a nice way of covering your behind if ever those worst-case scenarios do happen. And, you know, they do sometimes happen, and they'll happen when you... It's not like they'll happen on your schedule. You know, you're not gonna. It's not going to be on your calendar. You're not going to have time to plan for it. Like, no one's going to call you up and say, hey, that disaster, is it best for you on Tuesday or is it best for you on Thursday?
Yeah.
And so this is a nice way to make sure you're covered.
Well, I know there's one time from my experience where I had a lot of photos on my phone, but it was before you backed photos up to the cloud and stuff, and whoop, I dropped it in a pool.
Yeah.
And that was it. Like,
lost
all my contacts, lost all my photos and stuff. So it just takes experience like that for you to be like, I'm going to back this up. I'm going to copy those photos. I'm going to clear out my cloud stuff so that I have more space for future photos. And it's just things that you learn and hopefully that you don't have to experience the pain of losing those things. But I think that about wraps up this episode. So thanks for all your tips too, Nate. Like,
yeah, I mean, you know, this is it's an important conversation, and it's one that you should, you know, have with yourself, have with your friends and family. Is where is my stuff?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, where is it in terms of, can I get to it easily and quickly if I need to? Can I get to it across the devices I'm using? Is it accessible? Is it affordable? But also, who has access to it? Can I share it with my friends and family? There are a lot of these services, Dropbox, Google, you know, iCloud, whatever. They'll let you share specific albums with friends and family. There's a lot of great features that go into them. Dig into them and figure out what's right for you, because none of these services are exactly the same. None of them cost exactly the same. You got to find your workflow and your balance. Yeah. You know, being able to talk about these things, but also, you know, thinking seriously and maturely about the security aspects too. Yeah. It's an important conversation.
Yeah, I think look into what ecosystem you're tied into the most. Mm-hmm. For me, it's Google.
Yep.
So for you, I'm guessing iOS and Apple and stuff. For Al, it's Microsoft. And so use those, the things that you're kind of comfortable with. But then think about, you know, having a couple of others like Dropbox or OneDrive and stuff. But if you want to find
platform agnostic options,
exactly, don't tie yourself just to one ecosystem. But if you want to find all the notes and links to the things that we talked about today, you will be able to find those at our website, and that's at twit.tv/KH, and I'll also have links to maybe some of the portable drives that we used here, and that former episode 147 that you can go back. If you missed it, it's probably because you weren't subscribed or you didn't download, which you can also do at that URL. But if you have a project, a suggestion, a question that you want to propose, the best place to do that is on Google+, because that's where the know-how community is. We've got over 11,000 members, and I know that very well, because now that Padre is gone, I'm the one doing all the reviewing for people who want to be in the group. And the reason I do that is because we don't want any spam bots. We don't want anyone just trolling, but it's a great community. If you have suggestions of hard drives that you use, or maybe you have your own terrible story where you lost all your storage, go there, share it, tell us all about it. We'd be glad to hear it. But another place you can find us talking about being platform agnostic is on Twitter. I'm at @cranky_hippo. Nate?
I'm at @NateOG.
Nice. And you do other stuff. You're doing another podcast with Mark Million, right?
Yeah, my buddy Mark Million from Bloomberg and Brian X Chen from the New York Times. We have a nice little, usually about 30 minutes or so per episode, a podcast called Buzzkill.
Yeah.
And usually we talk about tech, politics, pop culture.
Hit the button.
Yeah. And yeah, if any one of the three of us gets tired of the topic at hand, we have a buzzer. It changes each week with a little noise theme to that episode. Hit the buzzer, kill the topic, and we have to move on.
Yeah.
So we keep it moving and hopefully keep it interesting. But it's basically just, you know, three friends kind of BSing with each other and talking about anything we want.
That sounds a lot like know-how, actually.
Yeah, it's pretty fun.
Cool. Yeah, I'm going to check it out, because I've seen Mark on our other shows and stuff too.
Oh, yeah. But yeah, Mark and Brian are tops. They're fantastic.
Well, I don't know if it's a good segue, but speaking of fantastic, we wouldn't be able to do this show without our director. Creed. Is it Hal? Hal? It's
excuse
Hal.
Me, Brian. It's pronounced Alex. Also, excuse me, Brian. Are you sure you dropped the phone in the pool, or was it just in your or was it just in your pocket when you casually walked into the pool?
See, this is the problem with working with friends, is they know all your stories, mm-hmm, and I would have liked to said, yeah, oh, the phone just flew out of my hand. No, I willingly walked into the pool with my phone in my pocket.
Yeah.
That's why swim trunks should not have pockets.
Ooh, wait, you did that? That, yeah. I'm sorry.
All it takes is one time to do it, and you'll never do it again. But no, swim trunks with pockets should not exist. And I put my phone in, and I like casually walked into the pool.
Yeah.
And I think I was in there for about 5 minutes or so. Before and Alex was there too. It was 4th of July.
And That's how he knows.
It's like patting my shorts. Like, it feels like there's. Oh no. Man. Oh no.
Heartbreak.
And it's one of those things too where everyone's like, "Oh, throw it in rice. Put it in the microwave." And like, "No, it's too far gone."
You know,
it's
I've done. Tried the rice thing. It hasn't worked for me. I have friends who've tried that and it's worked for them. So
I think it depends. Yeah. Mine was submerged for like multiple
Thankfully,
minutes.
Thankfully, some of the newer handsets from most of the leading manufacturers are water resistant. So they can
now
handle
they
that
are.
Sort of thing.
Yeah.
Now, but that's like happened within like the last year and a half. So, yeah.
This was 2 years ago.
It's a long time ago. Technology has progressed.
Little by little, every day.
All right, well, I think that'll do it for today. If you want to if you want to make sure you don't lose your stuff and you want to know how, back it up. I'm just thinking of that intro we did.
Back it up.